Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 149 of Weed All About It, the popular recurring feature called the World Weed O'Clock Report. Longtime listeners know my alter ego, the sonorous, handsome-sounding anchorman who sifts through dozens of periodicals, newspapers, and online sources to bring faithful podcast listeners the latest information about our favorite crop. The World Weed O'Clock Report isn't your typical 6 o'clock news, but it is how I imagine the media might cover wheat if there wasn't enough of it. Before I introduce my doppelganger, a reminder to follow the Washington Grain Commission Facebook page as one more way to ensure you are alerted to the Weed All About It podcasts I post every Tuesday morning. And you can see photos of the individuals I'm interviewing. Thanks to those of you who have written in requesting your damn hero sticker, the one I talked about in episode 146 entitled You Can't Beat Riverfest for Damn Education. Those new subscribers are much appreciated. Now, on to the news. Hello everyone, I'm Scott Yates with the World Weed O'Clock Report. Here are today's headlines from the world of wheat. Head-spinning developments. A little more than a month before announcing an agricultural trade deal with Japan, President Trump surprised and angered the U.S. wheat industry by stating during a speech that Japan didn't want our wheat and they only bought it to make us feel good. All of that, however, was forgotten and forgiven when Trump announced the partial trade agreement with Japan on September 25th. Partial because it didn't address the biggest part of U.S.-Japan trade, automobiles. As a result of the president withdrawing from the Trans-Pacific Partnership early in his term, U.S. wheat was becoming more expensive into Japan than either Canadian or Australian wheat. That's because Japan, Australia, and Canada were all members of the reconstituted Comprehensive and Progressive Trans-Pacific Partnership, without the U.S. The new deal now puts most U.S. agricultural exports to Japan on par with countries that are part of the CPTPP. The deal is set to begin January 1, 2020, but Japan's Diet, a bicameral legislature, must approve it. Under the agreement, more than 90% of agricultural products and food exported from the U.S. to Japan will either be duty-free or have lower tariff barriers. The U.S. exports about $14 billion worth of such products to Japan. U.S. wheat exported to Japan is worth more than $600 million annually and accounts for more than 10% of U.S. wheat exports. For he's a jolly good fellow. President Trump made the announcement and received the kudos for signing the agricultural deal with Japan that will help U.S. farmers maintain their 50% share of the Japanese wheat market, but it was the negotiators in the trenches who put in the time and effort to secure the agreement, including Ambassador Greg Dowd, the U.S. Trade Representative's agricultural negotiator and former Kansas farm boy. Honoring his efforts, Gary Bailey, chairman of the Washington Grain Commission, wrote a personal letter to Dowd, who appeared at the 2018 Tri-State Grain Convention in Portland and was the focus of episode 108 of Weed All About It. In the letter Bailey wrote, he described the collective sigh of relief that was heaved by thousands of farmers, landlords, agribusinesses, and others upon hearing news of the pact. Describing the Japan issue as the one that kept him awake at night over the last year, Bailey said, "Thanks to your efforts, the U.S. wheat industry will not only maintain its longtime Japanese customers, but farmers everywhere will get a much better sleep." Bailey closed by asking Dowd to thank his boss, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, and President Trump. Wheat is good, but what's good wheat? Arcadia Biosciences is expected to begin selling good wheat as a retail flour with reduced allergenicity and improved protein quality soon. Arcadia Biosciences uses technology to help create products with the aim to decommoditize wheat by adding nutritional value to a well-loved food ingredient. In 2018, the company introduced reduced gluten content wheat. Arcadia, which has offices in Davis, California and Seattle, entered into an agreement with Ardent Mills to develop wheat varieties with an initial focus on extending the shelf life and improving flavors of whole wheat products. Elsewhere, the company has also entered into a deal with Arista Cereal Technologies and Bay State Milling for commercialization of its high fiber-resistant starch wheat in several key markets. Resistant starch is a sort of dietary fiber, and the good wheat version can deliver three times as much as traditional varieties. Bread basket to cornbread basket? We think of Kansas as America's bread basket because from 1839, when the crop came into the state, until the introduction of genetically modified corn and soybeans, it was. As recently as 1989, Kansas farmers planted more than 12 million acres of wheat. The first GMO corn crop was introduced in 1996. By 2019, planted wheat acreage fell below 7 million acres. The value of Kansas wheat has whipsawed along the way. In 1989, it was worth about $800 million. A record value was achieved in 2012 at $2.9 billion. In 2018, that had fallen to $1.3 billion. A ray of startling sunshine, followed by gloomy weather. China's recent purchase of 130,000 metric tons of soft white wheat, the first major purchase of U.S. wheat since the trade war between the two countries broke out, is a big deal. How big depends on whether purchases continue, and that now appears in doubt. That's because following the early October purchase, the U.S. blacklisted 28 Chinese companies due to alleged human rights violations against Muslim minorities in the country. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross said the action will ensure that our technologies, fostered in an environment of individual liberty and free enterprise, are not used to repress defenseless minority populations. That netted a response from China's foreign ministry that urged the U.S. to correct its mistakes, withdraw the recent decision, and stop interfering in China's internal affairs. Asked whether China would retaliate, a spokesman said, "Stay tuned." China has been ratcheting up its wheat purchases for a few years until March 2018, when the trade war broke out and the spigot turned off. In the 2016-2017 marketing year and the 2017-2018 marketing year, China purchased nearly 2.5 million metric tons of U.S. wheat. Steve Mercer, Vice President for Communications at U.S. Wheat Associates, said it's yet to be seen whether the 130,000 metric ton purchase of soft white is a trend or a one-off. Given how quickly events are unfolding around the trade war, we will soon find out. Cougars multiplying across the state. If you're a fan or alumni of Washington State University, then you'll be pleased to know that the land-grant school set an enrollment record in 2019 with 31,607 students system-wide. The word system-wide is key. WSU's enrollment at its Pullman campus was just shy of 21,000 students, a decrease of 46 students compared to last fall. WSU Spokane had a 33% increase in professional students enrolled in the Elson Floyd College of Medicine, with a total student population of 1,685. WSU Vancouver was up 8 students. More than 5% of the student body in Vancouver are veterans, the highest rate across the WSU system. WSU Everett, the newest campus, enrolled 283 students this fall, up 8 from last year. WSU Tri-Cities experienced a slight decline in enrollment, but saw gains in minority and international student representation for a total of 1,813 students. The WSU Tri-Cities campus has the highest rate of minority enrollment at 42% compared to 30% system-wide. Nearly one of every three WSU students are the first in their family to attend college. It could have been worse. The emergency closure of the Bonneville Dam lock on September 5th, stranding thousands of tons of wheat in barges above it, illustrates three points. First, dams and locks get old, which is why there are periodic planned outages to update infrastructure during slow periods before it closes the system unexpectedly at the worst time. Bonneville Dam was built in 1938, and closing the river on September 5th was close to the worst timing possible for wheat shippers. There were 35 barges full of 123,000 metric tons worth of wheat, or around 4.8 million bushels. To the second point, that much wheat is the equivalent of nearly 5,300 semis that are not barreling down state roads. As for point three, the necessary repairs at Bonneville were completed September 27th, 2 days ahead of schedule, demonstrating the Corps of Engineers' management expertise and its contractor's skill. And now, a word from our sponsor. The Washington Grain Commission was established as the Washington Wheat Commission in 1958 to do as a group what individual farmers could not accomplish on their own. Working together has paid off by introducing new varieties, promoting farmers' wheat overseas, and educating industry members about the ongoing challenges and opportunities that lie ahead. The 10 members of the commission represent counties across eastern Washington. They include Chairman Gary Bailey, who farms outside of St. John, Mike Miller, who farms around Ritzville, Britt Osman, who farms in Asotin County, Mike Karstensen, who farms north of Elmira, and Brian Cochran, who farms near Colotus. Two barley representatives also sit on the WGC board. Ben Barstow and Kevin Klein, respectively, farm near Palouse and Edwall. In addition to the seven farmer members, two industry representatives sit on the board, Ty Jessup of Waterville and Damon Phelan from the Tri-Cities. Scott Steinbacher is the state's representative and manager of Eastern Washington State's Grain Inspection Service. Together, the board budgeted $6.7 million for the 2019-2020 marketing year, including $2.5 million for wheat research, $1.3 million for market development, and $540,000 for education. By banding together, Washington farmers have been accomplishing more than they ever could have alone for the last 61 years. And we're back. Barbecue, anyone? If you feel like you can't trust what food scientists say you should eat because they're always changing their minds about what's good for you, here's another example of why you're confused. After years of telling people to eat less beef and pork because of concerns the two are linked to heart disease, cancer, and other ills, a collaboration of researchers recently concluded that such advice isn't backed up by good scientific evidence. If there are benefits from eating less beef than pork, the researchers said they're small. In fact, so small they can only be discerned when looking at large populations. Put another way, the advantages of not eating steak or pork are not sufficient to tell individuals to change their meat-eating habits. Public health researchers rose up in alarm over the new findings, which were published in the Annals of Internal Medicine. Scientists at Harvard warned that the researchers' conclusions could harm the credibility of nutrition science and erode public trust in scientific research. As if that isn't already the case. Time to repaint those Save Our Dam signs. Since the early 1990s, the idea of breaching the four dams on the lower Snake River has never gone away. But for much of the last decade, voices calling for its execution have been muted. That began to change in May 2016 when Portland District Judge Michael Simon invalidated the 2014 Columbia Basin Biological Opinion, under which federal agencies operate the Columbia River hydropower system. In his ruling, he urged consideration of breaching one or more of the lower Snake River dams. That started the clock on an environmental impact statement review due in 2020. That fact didn't stop Vulcan Inc., a company founded by now-deceased Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, from partnering with Eco Northwest to conduct an independent study to evaluate the cost-benefit of breaching the four lower Snake River dams. To no one's surprise, the Eco Northwest study came out strongly in favor of breaching, arguing that the non-use values strongly favor dam removal. What's non-use? It's a controversial way of measuring the extent to which the public values a restored natural river system and reduced extinction risk of wild salmon. Unlike the cost of a truck or tractor, it's not a real number with real value, but it is rather based on what a segment of the public says it's worth. Nevertheless, Eco Northwest estimated the benefits from a restored river system at more than $8.6 billion over the cost of removing the dams. Adding insult to injury, the transportation portion of the report claims, "The benefits produced by the lock system on the lower Snake River do not justify its continued operation, even without the removal of the lower Snake River dams." River users mounted a strong rebuke to the study, pointing out an array of flaws and assumptions, including an attack on the idea of non-use, which one wheat leader described as a pie-in-the-sky number that environmentalists use when all else fails. 4 and counting. For those keeping count, there have been 4 incidents of glyphosate-resistant wheat found in the U.S. since the first incident in Oregon, which was announced May 29, 2013. USDA labs indicated it was the same variety of GE-resistant wheat that Monsanto had authorized to field test in 16 states from 1998 to 2005. On September 26, 2014, APHIS concluded that the presence of GE wheat of the type known as MON-71800 to be an isolated incident and closed the Oregon investigation after exhausting all leaves. APHIS also investigated GE wheat found growing at a Montana research facility that was the site of previously authorized trials between 2000 and 2003. The GE wheat in Montana was significantly different from the wheat found in Oregon. The third event was announced by APHIS on July 29, 2016, when a farmer discovered 22 GE plants growing in an unplanted field in Washington State, also of the MON-71800 type. APHIS was unable to determine how the plants came to be. The fourth event also occurred in Washington in June 2019, and the trait involved was different from the one found in Oregon. An additional GE wheat discovery was made in Alberta, Canada, between the two Washington events. Except for the Montana event, there has been no explanation for the finds. Brain drain. It's expected that the U.S. Department of Agriculture will not be able to release a number of its regularly scheduled reports, as nearly 80% of employees at one of its research branches have left the agency. The Trump administration's plan to move the Economic Research Service and the National Institute of Food and Agriculture from Washington, D.C. to Kansas City has resulted in a major disruption to the agencies. Employees had to decide by July 15th either to accept the transfer or be separated by adverse action procedures, a government euphemism for being fired. Figures collected by ERS employees show that just 16 Washington-based employees have moved to Kansas City, while another 141 have left the agency. The current and projected attrition will curtail research data products that encompass commodity estimates, agricultural sector forecasts, food and farm economics and statistical indicators for U.S. agriculture, conservation and food policy, and markets, said Kevin Hunt, a 10-year USDA employee and acting vice president of the union representing research service staff. A number of government agencies, farm groups, and economists rely on data from the ERS to do their job. In announcing the move, Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue said the relocation was not taken lightly. We are doing it to enhance long-term sustainability and success of these agencies, he said. White House Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, meanwhile, said the USDA move was a wonderful way to sort of streamline government. Karaoke Capital. Much has been written about the importance of Japan to the Pacific Northwest wheat industry, but have you ever been to Japan? If not, then now's the time to visit. Japan is making a huge effort to welcome foreigners and separate them from their tourist dollars. In 2017, 29 million people visited the island nation. The government aims to welcome 40 million visitors by 2020. As part of the goal, efforts are underway to make the country easier to navigate without speaking Japanese, and more businesses are taking credit cards in what is now largely a cash-based country. Organic wheat is not an oxymoron. Stories about organic wheat demand abound elsewhere in the country, but not so much in the Pacific Northwest, until now. Ardent Mills, the largest flour mill in the nation based in Denver, has expanded its organic capabilities by buying a grain elevator in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Ardent said the purchase will enhance the company's ability to support growers in the Pacific Northwest, partner with regional universities on breeding, and serve its overall customer base. The newly purchased elevator has a 2 million bushel capacity, and it's located on a UP right-of-way. Daniel Dye, CEO of Ardent Mills, said the acquisition enhances the mill's ability to source grains from organic and conventional family farms in the region. It gives us the opportunity to become the trusted partner for these growers, which is a key component of Ardent Mills' vision, he said. Ardent has also announced the ability to clean and pack intact grains, pearled barley, and dehulled heirloom grains at one of its Denver mills. Clean, organic, and non-GMO grains will be sold nationwide in 25-pound and 50-pound bags and totes. How things change. An article from the Walla Walla Union Bulletin from December 20, 1999, reveals the dynamic landscape of wheat farming then and now. The price of wheat at the time was $2.30 per bushel. That's $3.53 in today's dollars. Farmers said they needed at least $2.90 to break even. That's $4.45 in today's dollars. Trade issues at the time included the collapse of WTO talks in Seattle over the EU's refusal to eliminate $130 billion worth of agricultural support. Tensions between Pakistan and India had led to a weakening of Pakistan's economy and a shift to cheaper wheat supplies, sharply reducing U.S. exports there. Egyptian exports, the story said, had fallen by 80%. The Northwest doesn't export to either country today. How things change indeed. That's all for this edition of the World Wheat O'Clock Report. Until next time, I'm Scott Yates. Good day. And I'm back. That is the Scott Yates, who is the Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, alter ego of the dashing World Wheat O'Clock Report news anchor. I hope you've enjoyed episode 149 of Wheat All About It, the fourth edition of the World Wheat O'Clock Report. Please join me here again next week for another episode of Wheat All About It.